This is The Adam Ritz Show, a public affairs talk show touching on community, health, foundations, and more. The Adam Ritz Show is underwritten by Vibonomics, an audio out-of-home advertising marketplace and audio experience company. Info at Vibonomics.com. And now, from the Vibonomics studios, please welcome your public affairs radio host, Adam Ritz.
Hey, everybody. Adam Ritz here with you. I have Jay Baker on the phone, and we're ready to talk public affairs. I spoke for you, Jay. Are you ready to talk public affairs?
Interestingly, I'm always ready to talk about public affairs, but especially on this show.
Always ready for an energetic conversation. You throw in the topic of public affairs, and Jay Baker will not shut his mouth. So I wanted to start today with, and this is kind of in honor of my father. My dad was a barber for, I don't know, just approximately 40 years. He retired about 15 years ago. So in honor of my dad and his barbership, I want to start with a story of a barber mentoring program from Mended Arrows. And Jay, you might have heard about this through the news. Oh. It came across my desk this week. Mended Arrows Therapy Cuts Mentoring Program, giving free haircuts away to young men. The organization is called Mended Arrows, and they are healing-centered barbers that mentor young men through their free haircuts. So they'll talk about mental health concerns and conflict resolution, alternatives to violence by educating young men to properly handle their strong emotions and the conflict they have within themselves and in their community. All these helpful mentoring conversations happen when these barbers are giving the free haircut. How cool is that?
No, I think it is cool. You know, we know that there's a sort of a sociability associated with barbershops. So how cool is that, that they're really trying to help get a positive message across? Plus, I think to myself, too, if you're a young man, just looking as sharp as you can is going to be so helpful in very many ways.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even really think of that angle. You're actually helping your physical appearance with a really sharp haircut. I think of my dad when he was a barber, his clientele, like they'd come in. I get a quick, you know, $14 haircut at the strip mall. And it's honestly, it takes 9 minutes, maybe less.
Right.
I'm in and out. It's 14 bucks. And, you know, maybe you can tell when you look at me, he's got a strip mall haircut. But my dad was a different kind of barbershop. It was, you know, it was downtown and it was a social, it was like a social club. People would come in.
Sure.
There was a waiting room and, you know, there'd be three or four gentlemen in the waiting room waiting their turn for their 45-minute haircut, and everybody's talking. You know, they're talking about Monday Night Football or politics or whatever, their home life. It's just a chatterbox of opinions and sociability. And the 45-minute haircut my dad would give, it honestly, just like my strip mall haircut, the actual cutting of hair probably took 8.5 minutes. And then it was another 37 minutes of just BSing. And, you know, it was almost like he was a therapist for these people.
No, so, that's great.
I keep that in mind with this Mended Arrows Therapy Haircuts mentoring program. You've got a young man, you know, you've got his undivided attention, and he's sitting there with a cape around his neck, and he's getting a haircut, and he's got somebody, his senior, you know, somebody 10, 20 years older than him with life experience, giving him advice and mentoring him. I think that's pretty powerful. And you've got a lot of these young men that are, you know, maybe in their communities, there's violence, there's aggressiveness. There's no one really talks about that term conflict resolution. And, you know, you think of the term how you step to me or step off. Mm-hmm. A lot of times, like, it's just so easy for a young man to stick out his young chest and think, don't mess with me or I'll mess with you. And the next thing you know, there's a disagreement or an argument that leads to a physical altercation, which leads to violence or death. And now there's a young man who just got caught up in the hype and they're facing, you know, prison time. Their lives are changed forever. So I think it's pretty powerful to have a barber in this case telling a young man, you know, you need to get control of your emotions. You need to think long term about your life, about your family, about your goals, what you want to achieve. And don't let some minute of emotion in an argument change your life forever. Again, the organization is called Mended Arrows. Mended Arrows and their Therapy Cuts mentoring program. And Jay, they spell Therapy Cuts. The first syllable is T. Mm-hmm. T/HAIR, therapy cuts. So it looks like T herapy, therapy.
There you go. That good way to remember it.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, here's a new study, Adam, that doesn't sound good, but we kind of knew this was going to be a bit of an issue. They are saying now that some teen girls are spending more than 5 hours a day on their smartphones. And that's like every day. So no change from weekday to weekend. So 5+ hours per day. This is teenage girls. And their concern is the likely addiction to social media. And that has been tied to poor health and well-being.
Well, that's, you know, that leads into suicide rates. There's nothing. I mean, I think it's sort of cliche and a joke by now that the devil invented the internet.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a lot of bad that comes with the internet and social media. 5 hours of a day is probably too much. I think any expert would say that's too much.
Yeah, and the actual figure is actually like 5.8 for the larger portion of the group as they search through 2,000 respondents that are aged 13 through 17. And it's the actual usage for the big part of that group is just shy of 6 hours a day on the phone. So
unbelievable.
Yeah, a big concern if you're a parent. You know, it is hard to turn off the tap. It's hard to, you know, turn around this phenomena. One thing that recently on our show we had about pushback from educators, because initially, remember, it was like no phones whatsoever. Then it was like, well, what if I need my phone in case I need to tell my mom I'm here for band practice. Okay, well, you can't use the phone in the classroom, you know, but yet the phone is there at school. Well, you and I know once the kid has the phone at school, it's going to get used.
Yeah.
And it's not a malicious thing. It's just, no, the phone use is so pervasive that it's really difficult to, and I wouldn't want to be a parent right now, would you? I mean, your children are adults. My children are adults. You know, at that point, it's up to them how they want to conduct their phone usage. But I think if you right now had a teenage child, you have a quandary.
It's tough. Yeah, I have some close friends that have teenagers, and they don't. This one gentleman in particular, him and his wife have made a promise not to let their kids have a smartphone until they reach their freshman year in high school. And how hard would that be? I mean, there are kids in grade school with smartphones, let alone junior high. It'd be tough to, you know, to co-mingle with your peers while they're all on, not only on their smartphones, but they're on their TikTok channel. Maybe they even have fans. You're 13 and a half heading towards ninth grade, and you don't even have a TikTok. You don't even have a phone.
Well,
it'd be tough.
And I think it's, for me personally, as an adult, when a junior high school student has a significantly better iPhone than I have, it's like, hey, wait a minute.
Right. Now, here's the, you mentioned parenting and how difficult it would be today versus when you and I did it, pre-social media, pre-smartphone. And I don't know really what the experts would say, a therapist would say, a PhD would say, but I know what I would say. And some of these kids, I mean, I'm talking toddlers, strollers, with iPads and iPhones, with their zombie brains just melting into the screen. I think a lot of parents today lean on that smartphone too much to be their kid's, I don't know, best friend or babysitter or pacifier. You know, if a kid's screaming, first thing you do is just, okay, put their favorite cartoon on the smartphone, give them the smartphone. And it just seems like that's not healthy to me.
Well, absolutely. You remember initially when the tablet became kind of a thing, and there was obviously initially an Apple tablet, and there's a variety of PC related tablets. Well, the one thing about tablets was that, hey, there's gaming experiences and there's other internet experiences, and we've made the interface very easy for a child to learn. Well, initially you're thinking, well, that sounds good. Oh, wait a minute. You say now the kid who's, you know, 6, 7, 8 years old is now like fully engaged with his screen, perhaps at the cost of his well-being, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, when you're exposed to whatever you're exposed to at a younger age is what is going to mold your development into adolescence and adulthood. And it's no secret that if you're good at computers, the younger you are good at computers, the, you know, you won't be left behind as you grow up and everybody else grows up around you. So certainly that's a positive. But that zombie, I guess, zombie aspect of just almost like the hamster going up to get a pill.
Yes.
You just turn on the screen and let it, and now they're just a zombie. It's turning the brain into mush. I did read something recently that said the this aspect is really, you know, you think about, like, I'm Generation X, and we grew up in the 70s, and it was the cliche is just be home by dark. So mm-hmm. you'd leave the house, no smartphone. You didn't even talk to your parents. They didn't know where you were. We were under a highway underpass playing with broken glass, and all we had to do was be home by dark.
Yeah.
And through those experiences, that's where, you know, the 50-year-olds of today learned how to do what they do, whether you're an architect or an engineer or a playwright. I mean, you got out into the real world, and you were playing physically and mentally, you were being creative, you were, you know, creating things. Now, kids today, they're not out. They're not being creative physically. They're sitting in a chair with a screen. So we are, the point of this article I read was that these kids today, the future generation, we're missing a lot of the next generation of architects and engineers and creative people that aren't doing it as their kids today at age 6, 7, 8, 9. You know what I mean?
Right. So, yeah, it's certainly a difficult situation. So, yeah, I just brought that up because as parents, you want to be aware.
Well, the point of my story, I'm not encouraging young parents to let their kids go play with broken glass under the highway. That's not the point of my story.
It worked out perfectly for you.
But I think you know what I mean.
You became a lifelong Van Halen fan, and that's good. There's nothing wrong with that.
Nothing wrong
friends.
With that.
A new report from Centers for Disease Control and Prevention is concerned about what they're calling a staggering uptick in ADHD, or we've heard those, you know, we've seen the letters. It stands for Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder. And among young people, it has become an expanding public health concern.
Now, this I didn't see coming. I didn't know about this.
Well, researchers found that 1 in 9 children between the ages of 3 and 17 have been diagnosed with the disorder. And the symptoms include trouble paying attention, overactivity, and impulsive behaviors.
Okay, so medication is involved, and that is a big critique from a lot of people, that we over-medicate, especially for something like ADHD. But in the same breath, you know, with the wrong diagnosis, you could take care of this seemingly small issue if you catch it early and get it under control. I know,
yeah.
A lot, like I just mentioned Generation X, this existed in the 70s, but nobody knew about it. So you were just called a problem child back then.
Correct.
Or they put you in the back of the class or sent you to detention. Well, today it's diagnosable and treatable.
Well, you remember famously in the education system, if you had dyslexia, you were oftentimes treated as if you were unable to learn things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as you said, nobody regarded it as a treatable situation. And it was interesting what you just said, because they said while the number of children diagnosed with ADHD has risen, the report found that only about half were treated with medication, as opposed to two-thirds about 8 years ago. So Okay. They said that this may be due to a shortage in HD or ADHD meds when this data was collected. So interesting, you know, it's more of like just something to be aware of and realize that it affects more people than not. And then it's probably it's availability and personal decision as to how you want to pursue treatment.
Okay, that's good to know. Thank you, Jay Baker.
Now, here's something, Adam. If this happened to you, what would be your response? Mystery cash has been found stashed in multiple locations in Marysville, Ohio.
Okay.
More than $20,000 was found in a bathroom at the Avalon Theater, and over $10,000 was found in the bathroom of a Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Now this is very topical for me, because I just started season 3 of Ozark with Jason Bateman. Have you seen this show?
Yeah, I think it's absolutely a brilliant show.
It is a great show centered around money laundering. And prior to seeing the show, you find the money. I mean, to be a good person and guilt free, you'd turn it in. But I'm telling you, human nature is human nature. And with the debt we all have, it'd be nice to come across $20,000 one day. But man, after seeing Ozark, those bills are marked. They have, if it's drug money, if it's cartel money, and you keep it and use it, I'm telling you, that is you've got some big problems.
It's funny you mention that, because, you know, there's a number of famous films, including No Country for Old Men, which gives a scenario of somebody who found a large sum of money, but hey, it belongs to a criminal enterprise. And who does the criminal enterprise have to collect the cash? A psychopath.
And they don't come after you with higher interest and more payments. They come after you to end you.
Yeah,
there's no second chance. So, I remember that movie, No Country for Old Men, because it won the Oscar.
Yes.
But I'd never seen it. I didn't know that was what it was about.
Yeah, now,
after
you'll
finish
have to
Ozark,
see it.
When I finish Ozark, maybe I'll watch it.
You would like it. It's very interesting. And it's that what if scenario. And I just noticed recently, not too long ago, that some friends were sharing on social media, what would you do if you found this money? But so far in Marysville, they found $40,000. And in each location, the money was hidden in a way that you'd have to know where to look.
Uh-huh.
At this point, it's believed all the discoveries are connected, but it's not clear how they're connected.
Okay, so the person that found it, I mean, if we're doing this story, they returned the money, or they turned it in.
This is, the report emanated from the Marysville Police Division.
Okay.
So it is presumed that once this money was discovered, it was turned in. But here's a great point of what you just said. If they found some money in a theater bathroom, they found some money in a fast food business bathroom, was there some money in Marysville that was discovered by average everyday Marysville citizen and is currently unaccounted for? We don't know.
Well, we'll have to keep an eye on the Marysville Police Department, because if the police chief gets a brand new pickup truck, we know where that $40,000 went.
Yeah. It's tough sometimes, isn't it, when you have to be held accountable.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if you saw this, kind of a sad story, actually, about an emotional support alligator that went missing in Pennsylvania.
That's two terms I wouldn't put together, emotional support and alligator.
Yeah, you usually think in terms of kind of a pet that you could cuddle.
Yeah.
But apparently, Joey Henney posted on social media that his alligator Wally vanished while he was on vacation back in April.
So he took his emotional support alligator on vacation with him. Okay.
Yeah, yes, he did.
Well, I guess you know, that's why you have an emotional support animal.
We've seen some of the prices that certain places charge while on vacation. So you do need emotional support.
Yeah.
That is for sure. So they're hoping to eventually find Wally. Wally has quite a social media following and rose to fame after being denied entry to a Philadelphia Phillies game.
I think I remember that story. Yeah. So,
you know,
so now this famous alligator is back in the news because he's missing.
Yeah, it's, you know, just one of those things in life. So, and if you're a Philadelphia Phillies fan, you do need emotional support. We've always said that.
I mean, if you found the alligator, how ironic that to one man, this is emotional support. To another man, it would be emotionally scarring to find an alligator.
Oh, yes.
That would be my emotional scarring animal, the alligator. I hope I don't find it.
Hey, speaking of being on vacation, a California mother was slapped with a fine worth $88,000 after her kids mistakenly collected clams, thinking they were picking up seashells on the beach without a fishing license.
That is the ultimate in know the rules when you're traveling on vacation. Oh my gosh, that's a lot of how many clams?
Right now the fine was $88,000, so I don't know the sheer. Oh, they picked up the 72 clams.
That got
fined. Yeah,
that is hilarious. That I was actually asking like how many clams were taken off the beach, and you thought I was asking how much money. I said, how many clams?
Yes.
And you said 88,000.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's confusing, clams and money, etc. But they were on a family trip to Pismo Beach. It's known as the clam capital of the world. And her kids picked up 72 clams, and the Department of Fish and Wildlife happened to be there, confronted the mom, and told her kids were collecting clams without a license.
And it's more than $1,000 a clam to take a clam off the beach without a fishing license. That's
Adam, you know, when you're at the clam capital of the world, you know, it's gonna cost you.
How much is the fishing license? Like $3?
Possibly. Wouldn't that be great? That would be the great corollary to this story.
I know that doesn't sound reasonable.
What the fishing license would be? No, apparently a judge knocked her $88,000 fine down to just $500. So everything's going to be okay there. But that's still a pretty expensive lesson if you think about it.
Yeah, still $500 is too much to spend on something that useless. But quite a more reasonable fine from $88,000 down to $500. So do you have on record here who gave the $88,000 fine? Was it like the Fish and Gaming Commission guy? Was it a real cop?
Yeah. The Department of Fish and Wildlife, they were there patrolling the beach, doing what they do, keeping the beach safe for clams everywhere.
I mean, you've got to believe that officer like called into the office and said, I've got a whale here. We're going to have a party. We're getting $88,000. And then it was knocked down to $500. Oh, man.
See, and just about the time you think, well, this is a one-off, apparently in 2023, 58 citations were issued in the county for illegally collecting clams. So it's actually a thing on this California beach.
And if they look like sand dollars, you know, I'm not well-versed in this part of the seafood industry, but if you take a sand dollar home and you can make a Christmas ornament out of it, I got to believe if you took a clam home thinking it was a sand dollar, the backseat of your car is going to stink.
Yes. Absolutely.
By the time you get to Tennessee, it's going to reek.
we're going to finish up here, Adam, with famous songs. As you well know, there's just certain songs that you keep hearing on the radio and you think, well, surely that's been played on the radio like, what, a billion times.
Okay.
We know that the band Led Zeppelin became famous in the 70s and 80s with a song called Stairway to Heaven.
I've heard of that one.
The band's singer, Robert Plant, decided enough was enough back in 2002. He donated $10,000 to a Portland radio station on the condition they stop airing Stairway to Heaven.
That is a level of success that any lead singer would hope for. So the first thing you want is to get a record deal and make money. The second thing you want is to make so much money you can pay a radio station to stop playing your song. That is unbelievable.
And it caused me to do a little research on what exactly are, let's just say, the 10 biggest songs ever on radio. And this came up recently when somebody certified that every breath you take from the Police is the most played song on the radio.
Okay, I can see that for sure.
Yeah, it was a huge hit in the 80s and still gets airplay today.
And it, you know, multi-format is what they call it. You could play it on a pop station, a hit station, a classic hit station, an adult contemporary station.
Yes, it has some legs, as we like to say. Mm-hmm. Van Morrison, Brown Eyed Girl.
I believe it for sure. Very popular.
The Righteous Brothers, You've Lost That Lovin' Feeling.
Okay, those last two are older than I would say the average songs are on this list. They've got to start getting newer here, don't they?
Yeah, but if you think about that, I think Brown Eyed Girl has been a pretty popular song. And then You've Lost That Lovin' Feeling, I think, got extra nods for being part of Top Gun, movie Top Gun.
For sure. Yeah, I like the original version, although Tom Cruise did a nice job.
his version is considered the more popular one. Yesterday from the Beatles, like you said about an older song, The mm-hmm. Association, Never My Love.
Wow. Okay, that's a surprise to me.
Yeah, think about how old that song is.
Yeah.
You Really Got Me, The Kinks.
Okay.
And famously covered by Van Halen.
There you go. Generation X's version would be the Van Halen version.
Benny King's Stand By Me, once again, became huge, I think, because it was used in a movie.
Of the same name, Stand By Me.
Yes. Eric Clapton's Layla.
Okay, great tune.
And Frankie Valli, Can't Take My Eyes Off of You.
That's a great song. I do love that song.
The top 10. So if you hear those songs, you realize you are listening to one of the 10 biggest songs that ever appeared on radio.
And, you know, I thought the songs were going to get newer after your first third song. But really, the newest song on that list was the very first one you mentioned from the Police, Every Breath You Take.
Yeah, and then it gets into older material.
Yeah, so oldies music is certainly popular. There was a study done, I think it was 2016, was the first year that old music outsold new music. It was the first year ever, meaning up until 2016, the highest selling songs in record stores, if you will, were new songs, the latest albums, the latest songs in the top 40 of that day. Well, in 2016, that was the first year the top-selling songs of the year were older, were the older songs. So, I envision a kid like my nephew, who is 15 years old in 2016, who's downloading and buying songs from Kiss and Def Leppard and, Van Morrison and the Beatles, instead of downloading songs that just came out in 2016.
Yes.
Okay, so there's your music roundup from the expert, Jay Baker. Thanks for joining us. For our listeners, if you'd like to listen to this episode or any of our previous episodes in podcast form, you can do so on our website, adamritzshow.com.
The Adam Ritz Show is recorded live in studio at the Vibonomics Worldwide Headquarters. Learn more about the Vibonomics Audio Out-of-Home Marketplace at Vibonomics.com. For information on this broadcast, including past on-demand episodes, interview submissions, and syndication contacts, visit adamritzshow.com.